Succession Season 2, Episode 2, The Vaulter, is over, but we are just getting started here on post-show recaps. Hello, everyone. Josh Wigler here, joined here by Emily Fox. Emily, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Guys, awesome. We're podcasting about Succession, not because our dads told us to, but because we genuinely want to be podcasting about Succession.
The idea that my dad would even know what Succession was.
Or a podcast. Both of those concepts
are
kind of
weird. You've been trying to explain that to him for years now. He's like, interesting.
No, this is something that
technology,
we want to do.
Don't like it.
This is not stemming from our daddy issues. We are podcasting because we want to. These are the desires straight from our own hearts. Ones we cannot even explain by any measure other than fulfilling some base instinct. Emily Fox, like a kid stealing candy from a candy store, or a grown man stealing batteries from a bodega and then throwing out the batteries 2 seconds later. Because why? I don't know.
He like stole like the weird battery you put in your smoke detector too, right?
I don't think it really mattered. I think he just wanted to steal some stuff. And so he stole some batteries.
He's like, yeah, gotcha. And then like ran away.
Yeah. It's just that, so that we're living in the age of Dark Kendall. Darth Kendall. You know, he is gone. He's gone. He's Breaking Bad here, Kendall Roy, as we're moving through Succession season to The Vaulter, an intense episode of a show that is sometimes very funny, sometimes very upsetting. This week, a little bit of both, and that tends to be the Succession sweet spot.
Yeah.
If you're just finding us here on Post Show Recaps, we are talking about Succession every single week here for season two. We are a little bit late this week. We warned you about that last week. We should be ship shape next week, posting by Tuesday morning at the latest for episode 3. We want your feedback. We want your questions. We've got some really fun stuff to get through later in this episode. You can send all of that to @PostShowRecaps is our Twitter account. Please make sure if you're tweeting at us, you are tweeting that account. It is much easier to collect all your feedback that way. I'm @RoundHoward. Emily's @Emlet. Like an omelet with an E in the front.
That's right.
Subscribe on your podcast app of choice to the main feed if you'd like. We also have a Succession specific feed.
Yeah, we do.
That you can subscribe to if you want to just get your Succession fix. That is the way to do that. Ratings and reviews are greatly appreciated as always. We got a lot to get into here, Emily. Before we do, I want to take a quick second to tell you guys that this episode is brought to you by Progressive. Saving money on your car insurance is easy with Progressive. It's an average savings of $699 a year for customers who switch and save. In fact, customers can qualify for an average of 6 discounts on their auto policy when they switch to Progressive. Discounts just for starting a quote online or owning multiple vehicles. Get your quote online at progressive.com and see how much you could be saving. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Situations, Emily Fox.
Yes.
We got a lot of them.
I know.
A lot of situations happening in Succession. Season 2, Episode 2. This season, it's lit. We're two episodes deep and it's lit.
We're like really seeing the best of every character, I think.
Define the best for me.
Well, I think, you know, we spent most of season one sort of seeing the different sides to everybody, because everyone is at least two-faced, if not multiple-faced, if that makes any sense. But now we're seeing everyone put their plans into action, right? Like, we see Shiv being like, cool, that wasn't a joke, right? So like, how are we working this plan for me to take over? And we're seeing Roman be like, hey, I might actually have a shot here. How does this work? We see Kendall just kind of existing on this platform at this point, being the good boy.
He's the tip of the sword for his father right now. You know, that's what he's all about.
Yeah. And then we're seeing Logan back in full force, really. He's not sick anymore, right? He's kind of strongholding everybody in all the different ways that we kind of knew that he could, but didn't really see in the same way as we're seeing in season two. So that's kind of fun.
Gotta imagine he's still not in fantastic health, but we don't know the extent of it yet. And they talked like a little bit about it on this week's episode, when you see like Stewie on TV and he's starting to jab at Logan a little bit of like, is he fit to run this company? But it hasn't been elaborated on in too great of detail yet. He hasn't had any major episodes yet. feels like that's something that has to come up at some point this season.
Totally.
Right?
And I also think that that was a tactic that Kendall wanted to employ specifically to make Logan look stupid before, you know, the coup sort of blew up in his own face. Right.
Right. Right. So it looks like they're still he gave them a really significant playbook against Logan Roy. So they're still making all of that happen right now. A lot happening this week. Shiv is moving closer and closer into the Waystar inner circle as she is on her way to becoming Logan Roy's successor.
Is she, though?
Well, we'll talk about that. Mm. Roman is certainly still angling for stuff. I think, like you mentioned, it's, you know, your definition of it may vary and how impressed you are by his actions, but he is applying himself in a way we haven't really seen him apply himself to very dark and terrible and asshole-ish ends, but still he is applying himself more and I think he's taking it a little more seriously. Kendall is a monster this week, acting monstrously on behalf of his monster's father. There's some fun stuff with Tom. There's some fun stuff with cousin Greg. And then there is the nightmare situation that this episode draws its title from, the Valter, talking specifically about Valter, the company, the website that Lawrence Yi is the man in charge of, played by Rob Yang, a series regular on Succession, at least through season one. I haven't checked through season two. Introduced in that very first episode of Succession, kind of a really quiet presence throughout the first season of Succession. We saw that episode two of this week was going to be called Valter. We're like, oh, okay, so we're getting back into this, and like we're really going to be in the thick of Valter territory for season two, and no, it's just completely gutted and shut down by the end of the episode. The most like ruthlessly horrible evisceration that we have seen in a very long time on this show.
Yeah, and we also know that that was sort of Kendall's brainchild from season one, where he acquired Valter and really wanted, you know, Roystar to be, or Waystar Royco, sorry, so many names, to really be, you know, building their empire and sort of looking forward into digital news the way that Valter sort of presented itself. So for Kendall to turn right back around and stab them in the heart, basically, and gut them is a pretty ruthless move.
It's worth getting spat in the face over, for sure.
Is that all you've got?
I mean, I think when Kendall was like kind of surprised, like, that's it?
Yeah.
You don't have anything else?
I know. I also think the employees reacted very well in a lot of the scenarios that happened, like where he was like, so I don't want you guys to unionize. And everyone was like, oh, I feel like there should have been more of an uproar. But maybe they were like, oh, well, that's kind of unsettling and we have to process.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's because the perspective of the show, it's not grounded in those characters. It's grounded in the elites, right? Like it's grounded.
Sorry, I'm thinking about the other 99%.
No. But I mean, when we experience how the actions of the Roys impact the 99%,
right?
You know, it's always so powerful and devastating because we don't need to individualize those people to understand how awful their actions, the Roy's actions, are.
They're just
impacting.
Skulls.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they talk about that at one point, right? Isn't that
Tom's terminology. How many skulls do we got, Greg?
But that's how they think of it. They think of themselves in these huge royal Shakespearean terms, and everybody else is a frickin' peasant.
Yeah,
and it's really punctuated by what happens with the Valter shuttering. It's really brutal, and the arc of it throughout the episode is really fascinating too, where Kendall, you know, and Roman both go and they meet with Lawrence, and Roman is the one who's able to like kind of like sweet talk and smooth talk with Lawrence. They speak a similar language. Lawrence established as somebody who doesn't take Kendall very seriously, but Kendall is the one who actually believes in Lawrence's vision. Kendall already is just like a shell of himself anyway. He's a bit in zombie mode, so he's not the most personable, even on his best day, but certainly not here in his worst days. And when he and Roman go back to Dad with their impressions of like what should be done about Valter, Kendall lays out the case where like, we should invest in this. This is the future. There's some things that need to be fixed, but we can fix them and then we can get the ship sailing smoothly and get everything upright. And we could be voyaging into the future. And Roman is the guy who, it's hard to know if it's like out of spite or actually because it's his opinion that's like, no, let's abandon ship. Let's cut these people and let's do it ruthlessly. And Logan rules in Roman's favor. And Kendall is the one who then has to go and act as executioner. But the episode frames it in such a way that we think that Kendall is trying to go against his dad, go rogue, try to save everybody. But no, what he's actually doing is cozying himself up with Lawrence and getting himself so well positioned that when the guillotine comes down, it will be, as we like to say in Survivor Land, a pure blindside.
Yeah.
That it will be like an absolute nobody saw it coming. And it was horrible. It was horrible because it was very realistic.
Mm. Have you been fired like that before?
I have, very luckily, not, but I've seen, you know, I work in media and I've seen colleagues go down in ways that are not, terribly unsimilar to this. This reminded me very much of something that happened with Gothamist, a few years ago. If you look up Gothamist and if you want to read about Gothamist and the way that it got shuttered, when it was sold to DNAinfo.com, and they were, very critical of their owners, and they basically, just as they were about to, they had just voted to unionize with the Writers Guild of America East, the Gothamist staffers, and a week later, Gothamist got shut down by their corporate overlord, basically just because, like, you've been critical of us and we are spiteful and now you are dead.
And that's one of those things where I love how things that have happened in reality and things that are pretty topical, you know, in the media space seem to play into this storyline so well, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, they draw from the headlines, and very, very wisely and intelligently so. And I've seen a lot of, again, like, people in the media space, you know, bloggers that I follow or other journalists who I respect and admire, a lot of people have been reacting to this episode and being like, the Valter was the monkey's paw. Like, for so long we raged at television for not being able to, like, adequately express digital media correctly, and, like, always being like a farce or a parody, and it's just not close to reality. This was too real. This is too real. It was way too real. So I felt a little triggered myself, and I've been very lucky to not be in too many of these situations personally myself. But it was like ripped straight from the headlines, the way that they played out the whole Valter thing.
Yeah. And to go back into what you were just saying about TV, we watched Tom sort of walk into ATN News, right? And he's sort of coming in and thinking to himself, okay, this is my next moment. I'm going to control a lot of this stuff. Greg shows up, cousin Greg, and he's upset because he has morals and principles, and ATN News does not align with those morals and principles.
That's a great moment between Greg and Tom where Tom's like, what ethics? What morals do you have? Greg's like, I don't know. I'm against racism. And Tom's like, everybody's against racism. Greg, come on. I'm against racism. What else? It's kind of funny because it's like,
I don't believe in lying.
Like, yeah. You know, like, you guys are terrible, terrible people.
But that also, I think, mirrors a lot of what's going on in news media right now and in this day and age for us as well, right? Like, we have a lot of networks that, you know, aren't purportedly saying the real facts sometimes.
No, and I mean, I think the Murdoch analog has been pretty front and center on Succession from the jump, and ATN being, you know, an avatar for Fox News and everything like that has been pretty front of mind for the show. And now we're starting to dig into the belly of that beast here in season two, as Tom is going to be going toe to toe with Sid Peach.
yeah, you know, I didn't understand the bite peach metaphor.
You got to take a bite out of the peach, but nobody warned you that the peach bites back.
I love that for me. I was like, this reminds me of James and the Giant Peach.
Yeah. No, well, Tom kind of looks like he could be like the cricket or whoever, or the centipede, right?
Ew.
But he's, Tom and the Giant Peach is not something that seems to be working out terribly well yet, but I think it's going to be the source of some really amazing comedy moving forward, and probably some darkness as well. Things are not exactly breaking Tom's way. We'll talk about that a little bit more. I want to go back to what's going on with Valter. Do you think we've seen the last of Lawrence Yee on the show now that his whole staff has been wiped out, except for the food and weed verticals, which are getting folded into everything because they're the only ones that are doing well? That was the thing that was really triggering for me, was the website infrastructure being whittled down into the barest of skeleton
crews.
Right,
where they're like, we hired two different people to cover these two things.
And like, I can imagine like the work strain that's going to be on like the very few people who were quote unquote lucky enough to survive the purge. Yeah. Their lives are going to be utterly miserable. Mm-hmm. That is from experience that I have seen firsthand, that yeah. kind of thing. But do you think that we're done with the Walter storyline completely, or do you think that Lawrence Yee, who he and Kendall, you know, they framed the pilot, right? Like their little conflict, and once Lawrence got what he wanted, he was like, "You just invited me into the chicken coop, and I'm gonna mess you guys up." Is that done? Did Kendall get the last word? How do you think it's gonna play out?
I think that Stewie and
Sandy,
thank you, are probably going to see this as an opportunity to add a little bit of muscle to their fight, right? Because Lawrence is going to have significant pushback against anything with Waystar Royko now. He's not going to trust them. It's not a partnership anymore. They've created a pretty mortal enemy, so why not join the other side? I mean, that's really what this is all about on a regular basis, is seeing who goes along with Logan and who goes against him.
Yeah. I'll be curious. I like that idea. I think to see Lawrence pop back up in the Sandy and Stewie contingent, I think would be fun. I think that'd be a good alliance. I think that we need to see some more of the chickens coming home to roost.
I love chickens, so keep the chicken coop
metaphor going. Mm-hmm. So I hope you're right about that. Why do you think this happened? Is it as simple as Logan is a dinosaur and he really doesn't care about digital media? Or is it more of the mind game thing being played, where he's really testing and pushing Kendall to see just how loyal Kendall will be to Logan, knowing that Walter was Kendall's baby? Will Kendall be loyal enough and faithful enough to Logan to shut them down, even if it's not what he believes is the right thing to do? But if Logan says it's the right thing to do, that's enough. Do you think that it's because of Logan's actual drive that he doesn't want to, you know, he only cares about, you know, TV. He just wants to be involved in that and doesn't care as much about the digital thing? Or is this a test for Ken?
I think this is a test more than anything. And I think it's also fun for him to watch both of his sons go out against each other and sort of fight, and to see, you know, what Roman's able to pull up, even if Roman's wrong. And I don't think Walter really meant very much to Logan anyway. That was definitely Kendall's baby. So it makes sense for him to be like, okay, let's see if you'll kill one of your darlings.
You know, the way that the show is moving right now, you have to pay attention to what's being said, and you have to pay attention to what's left on the table, what's left unsaid for now. What are people actually thinking, and what are people actually feeling? And in terms of the stuff that's on the table right now, we have seen scenes where Logan is with Shiv and he is telling Shiv, "You will be my successor. This is real. I want to bring you in, and I want you to be the person." And so we're following that story thread because it's active on the show. But what is happening with Logan and Kendall? Like, is Kendall really just his flunky? Is he really just his muscle at this point? Is he really just like sort of like the, you know, is he just like the Kylo Ren that, you know, Emperor Snoke sends out to do his bidding and like go and butcher all of the Empire's, mixing my Star Wars trilogies at this point, but you get the picture, enemies. Like, is that what he sees his son as? Or does he see what's happened to Kendall, this, you know, the fact that Kendall killed a guy, you know, got a man killed, that he is so broken by it that he was trying to strike out on his own? Is he trying to mold Kendall more in his own image? Is this a period of time where Kendall is going to be amenable to falling completely under Logan's influence? And is he training his number one boy to properly take over Waystar in the way that Logan would want to see it go beyond his death?
Probably.
So I feel like, you know, like he's been like very cold and distant, and he's really ruthless with the way that he is, you know, sending Kendall right back out into the mix. But my mind just keeps going back to that final scene of season one where he brings him in for the hug and says, "You're my number one boy." Is that just lip service to like get him off his back?
Well, Connor's certainly not his number one boy.
Clearly, Connor's nobody's number one boy.
I mean, what if Logan, this is like a long game for Logan, and he like meant to insult that waitstaff guy just so he would get like really upset, go smoke some pot in the back, yeah, and then meet up with Kendall, and Kendall would be like, "I could definitely get drugs from this guy," and that, like, they cut the brakes on the car or something.
Didn't Kendall say,
he's like, "This is how you do it. You have to kill someone first.
This is how you do it." Didn't Kendall at one point say, like, "Dad sees everything. Dad knows everything." So maybe in like Kendall's like drug-addled brain, he buys that theory. But I think for him to be like, like for Logan.
What about my sober brain? I buy that theory.
Quite that clairvoyant, I feel like, would be a little.
Yeah, that's a little much.
A little much. A little too far. But I do feel like people are like, when is the other shoe going to drop with Shiv?
Send her away for 6 years or whatever he wanted to do.
Like, what is actually going to happen there with Shiv? And I feel like he's cultivating two options. You know, I think that as like the misogynistic asshole that Logan Roy has presented himself as so far, if he can get his number one boy in tip top shape to run the company the way that he actually believes in him, you know, he's always been pushing Kendall so hard over the years. If he can push him into a position where he really adequately reflects Logan's values, I feel like that's probably going to be Logan's preferred outcome. Where with Shiv will take the company in a very different direction. She's more liberally minded. She's, you know, she strays from Logan's philosophical and political views, such as they are, beyond I want money. Like, I think that she's not somebody who would take the company in the way that Logan has taken it. But if he has to leave it to her so that the company will endure, I feel like that would be his second place pick. So I think, like, he's authentic when he tells Shiv that I want you to be my successor. Like, I plan on this being the thing. But I think that he's still cultivating Kendall in case he's able to mold Kendall in the direction that he needs to get Kendall in.
Well, I think that's really smart. And like, it's probably a fun mind game that he's playing too. Cause this is all about playing chess pieces for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Both between different, you know, companies that he's buying up and selling and all the different entities that exist underneath him, but also like the marionette strings of his children.
Yeah. Yeah. Because my dad told me to. That's the reason. That's the reason that Kendall destroyed Walter and destroyed them. He did. He sent them all home. They get 1 week of severance per year served, which is a horrible severance package for many of those people who are probably like 2 years. They get 2 weeks severance and that's it. That's all that they're getting, that they're working. You know, they were about to be unionized, and the benefits that they would have gotten from a move like this would have been much better than what they are getting now, I'm sure. Their severance is terminated if they don't abide by the non-disclosure agreement. You see people who are like filming the incident. He says, yeah, post your videos. If you do that, you get 3 days severance. Unused vacation days, they're not going to be reimbursed. Health benefits lasting only a month. It's an evisceration.
You're really upset about this.
It's an evisceration. Well, I'm upset about it because, like, it's triggering. But yeah. I'm also upset about it because you root for Kendall Roy despite yourself sometimes, where like you want to see him step out from underneath his father's shadow. You wonder if it's possible after everything that's happened to him. The fact that he's gotten a human being killed is not great and certainly curbs a lot of the sympathy that you feel for him. But you just wonder where we're going with him. It's even in light of all of this, like, it breaks you when you see him with his kids and he can't even hug his kids.
Right. Yeah. I felt like that was a really poignant moment.
You know, he's still like just raging really hard. He's pounding champagne. He's still snorting so much coke.
Can we talk about the unit he bought that Greg's living in?
He bought like a party, you know, like the shag palace for cousin Greg, who I liked Greg's first apartment, by the way. The first one he looked at with like
the loft bed. I'm
mostly
looking for storage for myself.
it would have been, he would have woken up every morning and just knocked his egghead, which would have been very, very sad for cousin Greg the egg. But yeah, Kendall buys him an apartment, and Greg is very reluctant to accept it at first because he thinks it's just a joke. And then as soon as he realizes it's not a joke, he's just running around all over the place,
which is a great image.
I'm loving Greg and Kendall as a pair. I'm glad that we're still getting like Greg and Tom, because that's magic as well. But I think that the Greg and Kendall potential is big. And we've got some feedback about that we'll get
into. Poor Greg. He should just get away from this whole family. It's not worth it.
Yeah, probably not. But if Greg can inherit the world, then I'm going
to
be.
He needs to be a part of a family that hugs back.
Yeah, that would be ideal. So Kendall, he goes at the end of the episode, you know, after he's done what he's done to Walter, he goes to the bodega. He buys some cigarettes. He buys a lighter, and he steals the batteries and he throws the batteries away. And that feels like that's just like I can, you know, create chaos completely of my own volition. This one is purely on me.
My dad didn't tell me to do
exactly.
This.
Exactly. I think that's literally it. Right. Like, I don't see any other real meaning behind the batteries other than that.
At least save the batteries. You might need them for something.
No, he's a horrible person. They're all horrible people, so he's just going to do the horrible thing. Mm. There's some chatter online about the lighter that he bought. The white lighter. Have you ever heard of the white lighter myth, Emily Fox?
I haven't.
The white lighter myth, and this was posted on Reddit as it pertains to Succession and Kendall Roy by a user named, I apologize, Ballsacky Joe.
Oh.
On Reddit. You know, great really ideas come from strange places.
Really paints a picture.
So Ballsacky Joe pointed to the white lighter myth as it pertains to Kendall buying a white lighter. The white lighter myth is an urban legend based on the 27 Club, in which it's claimed several musicians and artists died while in possession of a white lighter, causing white lighters to be attributed to bad fortune. The myth is primarily based on the deaths of Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, and Kurt Cobain. The myth has been integrated with cannabis culture. I think Kendall is in deeper than cannabis culture.
Yeah.
But I think that the idea, at least as Ballsacky Joe posits it, is that the white lighter myth being attached to Kendall, is this an early sign that Kendall is going to have an overdose at some point this season? Could Kendall die in season two? Could we deal with that? It would be such a loss to the show because Jeremy Strong is such a tremendous actor and this character is excellent. But that would be freaking crazy and it wouldn't be completely out of character with the direction that Kendall currently is in. Mm-hmm. So I think if anything, like it helps just reinforce the idea that whatever future awaits Kendall Roy, it's a bad one.
Thanks, Ballsacky Joe.
Thanks, Ballsacky Joe. Let's talk about Shiv.
Yeah, please.
Real quick. Shiv, she has decided to tell Gil Evis to shut it, to eat this Gil Evis. she was going to be chief of staff.
How did you feel about her Purell comment?
Remind me of the Purell comment. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But remind me anyway.
Oh, basically, like a guy on the street was like, hey, it's you. And Gil was like, yeah. And let's say if I win, I take you out for a beer. You know, classic politician fare, right? They jump into the car and she's basically like, do you want some Purell for your hand? Because you just touched a stranger.
Yeah. It's like, you know, sure.
I don't think that that's that bad, but that I'm also a bit of a germaphobe.
You're a little bit of a germaphobe. I don't think it's the worst idea.
I carry Purell in my purse. If anything, she should have just handed it to him and said nothing.
I don't think it's the worst idea. Yeah.
But there is a classism that obviously is implied when she says this. So 100%. That's really what they're taking away from this. And obviously Ian or whatever the hell his name is, like, isn't either. Nate. Yeah. Why do I keep thinking his name's Ian?
I don't know. Forget Nate.
Yeah. Forget him.
But forget Nate.
Hopefully he goes away soon.
Well, I mean, that whole storyline may go away.
Yeah. But
it is possible.
Yeah. So she was basically more or less offered the idea of chief of staff for Gil if he wins the presidency. And that's obviously a very enticing opportunity for her. But
that'd be crazy. That'd be huge.
The idea of being the successor in her back pocket. So guess what ends up being the thing she chooses?
Yeah. So she chooses family. She chooses the company. She chooses loyalty to the father rather than this possible job deeper in the Gil Evis White House, should such a thing come to exist. And she believes in him as a presidential candidate. He represents the things that she believes in. So that would be a guarantee of working in an environment that that she could do some good. But she's deciding instead to go deeper into the viper's nest. And people are rightfully afraid of like how that's going to shake out for Shiv.
Yeah, I think putting all of your eggs in one basket at this point in time, especially considering the risk involved with that being your father and your siblings around you, too, who are also vying for this position and have no idea of the arrangement behind closed doors, as well as your relationship with your husband. Like, Tom is not thrilled that she's been potentially offered this role.
I don't think she really cares that much about Tom.
I don't think she does either. And also, in what world would Tom actually be the successor?
I have that in my notes. Does Tom seriously think he's going to become the king of the world?
I was like, really? You just got like head of ATN News. Sit there. Hang out with the peach.
It's great to wallow in Tom's misery, though.
I like when he stuck up for himself at the suit comments at dinner.
Oh, yeah. When they were making fun of him at dinner, when they went over to Roman's house and Roman and his girlfriend Tabitha, when they're just like really giving it, and Shiv as well, to Tom over his suits. He's just like, hey, Shiv, fuck off. It was like, whoa,
yeah,
biting back. That doesn't happen very often.
I know.
But Tom's pissed because
I think he was kind of owed that.
Shiv waited a week to tell him any of this. I'm frankly surprised she actually told him. I kind of thought
too.
She wasn't going to.
But she also is like faltering on like the exact specifics too, because she's like, I don't know. Do I want to do it? Do I not want to do it? When in reality, she's like, I want to do this.
Well, this is what she does. We've seen it with Tom before. Like this is not the first time that Shiv is like gaslighting Tom, where she like tells him like, oh, well, I don't know if I want to be monogamous. Like, I don't know if I'm that kind of person. Like, but that could be fun, right? Like, that could be our adventure. He's like, yeah, I guess so. Maybe. He's like, no, it totally would. Like, we would just like have a great time and everything would be great. He's like, oh, okay. Like, she's doing the same thing here with the succession, with like the line of succession.
Does not make for a happy marriage, I will tell you.
No.
Gotta be direct, guys.
Gotta be direct.
Right, Josh?
Slide into each other's DMs and just tell them what you feel.
Or talk normally.
Or just talk eye to eye, face to face.
Well, we
person.
Never make eye contact.
We
so
rarely do. We rarely do. It's always very awkward when our eyes meet each other's. But yeah, it's like, but Shiv and Tom, they at least it's out there now that this is happening. And
he's how super Tom's, bummed and he got a cold because of it and et cetera.
Yeah. And the great line from Tabitha when he and Tabitha are alone and she says, you should try swallowing something for his cold.
Oh!
Which, if you remember Tom and Tabitha's past connection, this packs an extra wallop.
Did Ballsacky Joe have anything to say about this?
I think Ballsacky Tom is having flashbacks in this moment with Tabitha.
Sorry, I digress.
Anything about Roman that you wanna get into?
Well, I think that there is one interesting moment that he has with Shiv alone, because they're starting to get close in a weird way where, you know, they have a double date together. That's not something that they've historically done. And Roman has this quiet moment with Shiv where he's like, you know, I'm not necessarily like the obvious choice, but I'm here in the room with everybody. And like, why not me? You know, why can't I be the successor? And Shiv, obviously sitting on all of this information and knowing everything that she knows through, you know, her sort of needling of Logan and figuring out her next move. It's just like, you don't know. Like, yeah, you could totally be the successor. So I think that that's interesting to see Roman sort of starting to come into his own. And he's still a total douchebag about it. But
well, it's wild. What Roman does is, I mean, what Kendall does is horrible and brutal and surprising in its brutality. And I think what Roman does is brutal in a way that's surprising, but like surprising for different reasons. Like it's surprising because it's like, it's not surprising because what he does is so ruthless and evil. It's surprising because what he does is like relatively intelligent in the realm of horrible things to do. Like it's, he displays like decent tactics, and he's the one who says like, we should gut Walter. You know, he's the one when he's meeting with Lawrence, he's speaking Lawrence's language in person. They seem very chummy. But behind Lawrence's back, he fully sells him down the river. He goes out to drinks with the Walter staff.
Yeah.
He goes out with the writers
and makes fun of IPAs.
You know, Roman. Yeah. Like Roman is the kind of guy that like, he can go out with people and schmooze. He's a schmoozer, and he schmoozes with these people, and he comes back to Logan and says, I went out to drinks with these people. They're going to unionize. We need to crush them before that happens. So to juxtapose the night off that like we did not get to see, where Roman, who you can picture just like having a great time with the Walter writing staff, finding out their big secret and their plan, and then immediately in this scene with Logan, just like completely weaponizing that and using it against them. And why is he doing this? Like, is he doing it because he actually believes that we should not be investing in Walter? We should destroy Walter. Our future lies elsewhere. Is it because he's so spiteful towards his brother? Because he hates Kendall so much right now. Does he know that it's going to impress his dad if he's super cold blooded? Like, no matter what, it's all terrible, but it's like surprisingly shrewd the way that he gets to this place. And I feel like that is out of character for the old Roman Roy, but this is a Roman who is like to some degree trying to apply himself. I think a little late to the game to be applying himself, but he's trying to apply himself in his father's eyes.
But you also see like a moment of vulnerability when he's talking to Tabitha on the side at like Connor's weird hotel party that he has,
right?
Where he's like, well, I said we should get rid of them. And I think we actually might do that. And I'm just like trying to process like what that's like. Was this like the right decision? And like, I don't know if it's actually going to go through and like, you know, what should I do? And Tabitha's like, no, this is great. Like you're being listened to, like you're being heard. So I think that that's kind of cool too, to see him sort of dial it back and be like, wait a second, did I do the wrong thing? Like, did I mess up? Like, or should we go forward with my idea? I mean, Kendall's always the ideas guy. Like, how, you know, how am I being listened to all of a sudden?
Well, it's interesting too, because it's his idea that sells Logan, but then it's Kendall who goes out and does the butchering, right? Like,
yeah.
Roman basically draws up the executive order that Logan signs off on, and Kendall's the executioner of the order, and the way that he executes it is so much more thoroughly awful than I think even Roman could have imagined. So even though Roman lobbed up the play, it's Kendall who plays it out. And because of that, Logan gives Kendall a seat in his office. He's like, stay with me, make yourself at home. Worth mentioning that making himself at home for Kendall is like
sitting
at a desk by himself. His phone isn't even out. He's got nothing to read. He's just sitting in a wooden chair.
You know, I was wondering how long he was going to be there before he was like told to go home. Or dismissed. I don't know.
He's a ghost. I think it's a little late for Roman, but I'm curious to see where they're planning on
totally
taking all this. How about some feedback? Let's start getting into the feedback that we've got for this week, and we've got some great feedback which you can send our way again on Twitter at @PostShowRecaps, tweet at @PostShowRecaps. You can also tweet at Emily at Emilet, and I am at Round Howard. We will get to your feedback at the end of each podcast every week, beginning now with our good friend Brendan Fitzpatrick, who actually he sent a bunch in, but Brendan started off by pointing us in the direction of a really great tweet from Joanna Robinson of Vanity Fair, who covers Succession as well. She tweeted something really cool. I loved this, that it was dictionary definitions of the names associated with the Roy siblings.
Oh.
And they match really, really well with each character. Ken being one's range of knowledge or sight, as in such determination is beyond my ken. You know, beyond the scope of Kendall and his knowledge, and is his range of knowledge and sight limited. The definition of Shiv being a knife or razor used as a weapon. A knife! We know what Shivs are. We just finished a watch through of Oz, Emily. So Shivs were brought up quite a bit.
I didn't even put that together.
On that show.
Thanks, Josh.
Rome, which is to move about or travel aimlessly or unsystematically, especially over a wide area. That's Roman Roy to a T. He's just kind of meandering around.
Mm.
Right? And then con, I don't buy quite as much. Con, to persuade someone to do or believe something, typically by use of a deception.
I don't think he's smart enough to deceive anyone.
Well, I mean, I guess he's trying to con Willa into being his actual life partner, but I feel like she's kind of conning him straight back.
Yeah.
But I if that's like the level of thought that was put into the namings of these characters, or if it's just a happy coincidence, either way, I think that that's really, really fun. Brendan also asks, do either of you have any embarrassing theme park experiences?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
That you would like to share? I will just say that mine has already been aired on the air on Post Show Recaps within the last couple of weeks. If you go back and listen to a certain Stranger Things podcast, I will not relitigate the matter here.
Okay. Mine was the Apple Blossom Festival always had a carnival at the end of it. And I went after eating at a Chinese food buffet. I was put on the Cobra, which is an apparatus that hoists you into the air and then twirls you and then moves as an entire machine around. And it has two prongs. So like one side has like 10 different seats. The other side has 10 different seats and they're spinning. And the man who was controlling the device went to take a break and the other guy took over. So I got double the amount of time. He didn't bring me down when I was supposed to come down. I was stuck up there for an extra cycle and I barfed everywhere.
Emily, do you know that my embarrassing theme park story also involves throwing
similar
up Chinese food?
Really?
Yes. After like being on a ride, I was trying to impress a girl and it resulted in me puking Chinese food.
The only reason I ever went to the carnival was to try and impress a boy.
Yeah. So, look at us. We're so linked across time and space. Brendan also asks Emily if either of us have a big, beautiful portrait of the two of us on our apartment wall. I don't think we do.
No,
No. No. We have not. We have
certainly
not,
doesn't mean we can't get one.
We have not considered it. We are now, I believe, considering it.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to draw that up, we may be open to accepting.
Probably not, though. So don't waste your time
accepting your artwork. Fitzy's last question: how long do you think that the Tom and Shiv marriage of convenience can last? Do you think that they're apart by the end of the season? Emily, what's your take?
I wouldn't be surprised if they started to make moves to end things at the end of the season.
But I mean, I think that'd be a Shiv move, right? What would it take for Tom to be like, Shiv, I'm done? Because like being married to Shiv is everything for what Tom wants from his life.
And like the promise of everything that's to come, even if it's not favoring Tom, is still probably something that would be exciting for Tom and, you know, ensure a pretty expensive lifestyle.
Yeah, but he wants to be king of the forest.
Tom, you're not a king. You're not a king.
Not a king. Dave Baker writes in, who would you rather work for and why? Logan Roy or Bobby Axelrod? Bobby Axelrod, of course, played by Damian Lewis on Billions. And if you do not watch Billions, that's Emily Fox and my secret favorite show on television.
Even though we have no way of telling anything.
There will be no Billions podcast.
We have
no idea. That one's just for us. One's just for us.
Yeah.
Bobby Axelrod for sure, right?
Exactly.
I don't think that this is it's not even a little bit close as to who I would rather work for, Logan Roy or Bobby Axelrod.
Bobby Axelrod is a shark, but he's at least someone who's very kind to you in moments where, you know, things are hitting the fan.
You know, he talks to the people that work for him like he is like the commander of a great pirate ship, and he like shores up everyone's excitement and morale and like cares about that kind of stuff. I don't think Logan gives any kind of shit about any of that.
Yeah.
Also, Bobby Axelrod owns a pizzeria, so maybe you get like a company discount.
He knows how to smooth talk people. And he always really appreciates good food in general. Like he always has really top chefs like come in and like cook for him.
Yeah.
Into it.
And like people seem to be able to like kind of rise the ranks at Axe Cap in a way that I don't think that you really do. I think even though Bobby Axelrod is dealing with billions and billions of dollars, it still feels like a smaller shop in a way that Waystar is just like a monster. On so many different levels. I wouldn't want to work at either one of them. I think I would probably survive a little bit better at Waystar because like
I understand it.
I could like, well, there could be like I could be a mascot at the theme park, right? And like I could do that job.
And then you barf through the eyes.
I don't know what I would do at Axe Cap other than like make coffee for people.
Oh no, you'd be what's his face?
I don't know. I would make coffee for people. Dave Baker also asks, what happens first? Will Kendall regain the use of his backbone or will he totally self-destruct? What do you think happens first for Kendall Roy, Emily? Does he just implode because of everything that is weighing down upon him, including his self-inflicted wounds? Or is he going to have a rise up moment before that occurs?
I mean, I feel like he is like a sine curve. Like he hits like highs and then goes low, low, low just as much. We feel like maybe he hit rock bottom when the guy died last season, but now he's just sort of maintaining, right? He's partying, but he's not going absolutely nuclear on either side of things. Obviously, it's not great that he's using. I wouldn't be surprised if he hits another real rock bottom before he goes back up again.
You know, you mentioned Two-Face before in this podcast, Emily. You know what he used to say, that the night is darkest just before the dawn, but the dawn is coming. And could it be that Kendall, that Kendall Roy...
I wish you guys could see Josh's face as he was saying this. He felt so clever.
No, I just feel like an idiot when I'm going through with it. Is he going to be the Harvey Dent of Succession? And is there something still to come that's going to blow off half of his face metaphorically? And then he is just going to become a veritable Batman villain moving forward through the remainder of Succession. And if so, who's Batman?
Check us out for our Dark Knight podcast.
Cousin Greg as Batman would be amazing. He's got the height.
That's about it.
I think you could cast the Succession crowd as Batman characters.
Did you see his moves dancing around his new apartment, though?
Yeah.
Not very suave.
Cousin Greg is Batman, okay? Tom is the Joker. I'm going to go with Tom as the Joker. I'm going to go with...
Logan's Penguin.
Obviously Logan's Penguin. That's clear. I think Roman Roy might be the Joker.
Shiv is Poison Ivy.
Shiv is Poison Ivy. You could also make the Selena Kyle Catwoman argument, I think, for Shiv Roy.
I was just picking the hair.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I think Roman is the Joker and Tabitha is like his Harley Quinn. Kendall Roy is Harvey Two-Face, as they like to call him. I always thought that was a little silly that they call him Harvey Two-Face. But I think Harvey Dent, as Kendall Roy, or Kendall Roy.
All right,
Harvey
back
Dent.
On the rails.
Back on the rails. All right. Rich Easley writes in, what is Kendall's end game? I feel like Greg is going to play a part in whatever he has concocting. He's keeping Greg close and loyal to him. And we see that Greg doesn't agree with some of Logan's beliefs. We did see that. We have to assume that the documents that Greg took will come into play. Do you think that Greg is going to factor in to Kendall's end game at all?
He might notice like the way that Kendall's behaving and seeing that it's self-destructive and finding a way to sort of like weasel his way in there. I mean, he's sort of figuring out how to leverage power as he goes between the different siblings, right? So that could be a move that he makes.
Antonio, who has a lot of great feedback to close us out this week, had a note about cousin Greg and Kendall. And Antonio says, who's the most likely to find out first that everything that's going on with Kendall is happening because he killed a man? My money is on Greg.
Yeah.
I think that's a good pick. I think that's a good pick because Greg and Greg and Antonio are so close right now, which would make me very happy if they were really chummy in real life. But I think that Greg and Kendall are linked in a way right now where Greg is going to have he's got a view into Kendall's life in a way that other people don't.
And I also think that people think he's unsuspecting. Like, they're just like, oh, make Greg do the dirty work. Well, Greg is, you know, building a significant amount of knowledge in a lot of the back, like, handed deals that are going on, right?
And if one of the most optimistic views of Succession is that cousin Greg somehow manages to become the king of Waystar and he could bring it into a future without racism, and then he can mold the company in a way that reflects his core values.
I don't really know how I got here, but I'd like everyone to take Friday off. Like, can't you see him doing that?
You know, like if you hitch his wagon to Kendall and if you buy into the narrative that Kendall is just going to like, Two-Face his way to the top, right? Like, if he is going to just be like this agent of darkness for Logan, and he will somehow surpass Logan even in the realms of darkness, that Greg could be elevated through that, you know, rising tide of terror could lift Greg's ship and get him into a position that gets him closer to being someone where the series could feasibly end with him in a greater position of power, which would be exciting.
That would be exciting.
It would be very exciting. I also do think it's not impossible that the moment that we could be in store for with Kendall is that he realizes that if he finds his backbone and if he marries that with this ruthlessness he's also discovered, that he could actually act ruthlessly towards his own father in a way that he hasn't before. Like right now, he's company man, he's dad's number one boy. But if there's going to be some form of rebellion, and how would that rebellion be different than what we've seen from Ken in the past? Every time that he's tried to take his father down, he's tried to do it in ways that are like, you know, he had the vote of no confidence, right? But that was by the book. He tried to execute the bear hug, and that was like shitty to be doing it on his sister's wedding, but it was by the book. He's at his father's mercy right now, basically because his father has deep, deep blackmail on Kendall.
Right.
What can Kendall get blackmail on his father for? What can he get that's like a turnkey for Logan that Logan would care about enough to release Kendall of his current bond and empower Kendall in a way to surpass his father? I think that's something that we should be keeping an eye out
for. And especially since Greg already mentioned it to him too, where he's like, I know some things about theme parks.
Like if Kendall, if Kendall basically finds that stuff out, and if he's like, I'm willing to burn the whole building to the ground just to see it burn. Like, what do I have to lose? I'll go to jail for it. Surrender to me or I will do it. You know, like, if he's able to get himself in a place where it's like, I literally have nothing left to lose. You work for me now. Could something like that pop up?
Love it.
I think that Kendall's going to be a very dark guy before he's ever anything else. We may never see a version of Kendall again that isn't fairly dark is my expectation of the show. I think, like, the son will become the father in the same way where we don't know, like, the extent of Logan's daddy issues, but we've seen, like, lashings on his back. We've seen, like, signs of, like,
I forgot about that.
We've seen signs of, like, physical abuse he has weathered in his time. And I think this show doesn't end without Kendall really following him pretty hard down that path. Antonio also writes in, who's the most likely to sniff out that Shiv is in the driver's seat for the top spot? Roman seems utterly clueless, worrying about Tom, even though he's been in the room seeing Shiv take the ball. Kendall is in a mind-effed drug haze. My hope is that Tom lets it slip to Greg, and Greg weaponizes it to his new buddy, Kendall. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I would love that.
But who do you think? Do you think that, like, a leak from Tom is the likeliest way that it starts to get out that Shiv is in contention for the top seat?
I don't know, because it's not in Tom's best interest to do that unless Shiv threatens to end the marriage.
Well, I think he's a pretty weak-willed guy,
yeah.
And he's very fragile in his ego. And we have it's established on the show right now that Roman is concerned that Tom could be an heir to the empire, right? And he brings that up with Shiv. So if Roman starts trying to, like, needle Tom more and more, and the show has already, like, very cleverly established Roman being in a relationship with a woman who has, like, an embarrassing, not secret to hold over Tom's head, but an embarrassing relic from his bachelor party to hold over his head. They're already linking those two characters together kind of subtly. And Roman being Roman, if he comes after Tom in, like, the awful way that he often does when he needles people, could he needle Tom to a point where Tom's like, oh yeah, well, screw you, Shiv's gonna be in charge anyway, you're nothing,
you know? See that.
I think something like that is definitely possible. Antonio has we all love Shiv, but Antonio has some thoughts about how Shiv handled herself this episode. He says she sure handled it poorly, considering that they're in the middle of a hostile action and it was her position with one foot in both her family's business and in Gil's campaign that helped kill the story about the cruise ship payoffs. Maybe she shouldn't have lit the barn on fire before walking away from the campaign. And yes, unfortunately, this includes being shitty to Nate, who is easily the most hateable person on this show somehow. Agreed. And it is also, like,
stupid Ian.
Like, Ian slash Nate, how Nate of everybody is the most hateable, but I kind of agree that he's just the worst. Antonio continues, with Shiv poised to take over and with how much exposure her husband has from the cruise ship scandal, this was really poor handling by Shiv. Everything else we're seeing seems to suggest that she's going to crush this job, but this action seems to suggest she's really bad at this. So what gives? Do you have an attempt and an answer for why she would, you know, just, like, completely rip this thing to the ground?
I mean, I think that she has faith that she's going to persevere. I think really that's what it was. And she kind of, like, got a little out of control with it, but there is a classism and sort of an elitism to how she operates, and to kind of look at Gil and everybody else and be like, no, I'm better than all of you, was sort of her move, right?
I think that, like, we talked about this last week too. I think that she's got, like, emotional blinders on with this whole thing. That I think that this,
I hesitate to say she's being emotional because I think that that's kind of a bullshit thing to say about
I totally hear
you. Cause I kind of want to say that, where she let her emotions get the best of her. But, like, we've seen that happen with the men in this show too.
100%. But I do think that it's something that we're seeing with Shiv specifically, in that scene where, like, it touched her in a way that she did not expect that she could ever be moved. Because it just was something that she had completely ruled out for herself. So it's, like, personal. It's not just business for her. This is, like, it's like a world is opening for her that she never thought that she would have access to. So she loathed it for so long. And now that she has this opportunity to step fully through the door, I think she's leaving herself vulnerable in a way she hasn't left herself vulnerable before. So I think that that's part of why she acted the way that she did in this episode. She's, like, acting like a Roy for the first time ever.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by the emotion. emotional connection.
Yeah, no, I know.
I totally hear and agree with what you're
and
saying.
And I agree with you in the sense that she, yeah, she's been invited in. Like, literally, we see Logan be like, call the boys in. And then, like, I want her here, too.
Right.
And there's not even an explanation as to why she's present. And the guys don't even notice her, which I love.
Yeah.
She's like an assassin. So, like, I do agree that, like, she's kind of finally seeing the other side of things and is acting accordingly. Because she's seen everybody else model this behavior.
But I think it's like, something she never knew she wanted. And I think that that is... if not like quite throwing her off her game, I think it's changing her game.
Definitely.
And it's,
I agree.
It's emboldening her in a way that I don't think that she normally would react this way. I think she's typically much more calculated than the way that she acted towards Evis here. But
which,
like,
could be detrimental.
It could be.
The road.
It could be. Yeah. I think it's worth being worried about Shiv.
Yeah.
But I'm thrilled for the storyline. I'm thrilled for,
so am I.
For more. Yeah. For more character development for that character. Antonio closes us out with, what's the most embarrassing or pathetic thing you've ever done, quote unquote, because my dad told me to? What do you got, Emily Fox? What has the great Dave Fox done that has asked you to do that you've done and it was very embarrassing and you didn't want to do it?
I mean, he made me contra dance at like the wedding that my parents sort of planned. It was like a party 2 months after we actually got married up in Massachusetts. And like, I was excited for him to like meet some of my friends that he hadn't seen yet. And, you know, he was so worried that like the band that he's a part of, that's a contra dance band, was going to be playing and no one was going to be dancing, that he kept like telling everyone to dance like immediately upon arrival. Like, they couldn't even stop and get a drink yet. So he would be like, hi, really great to meet you. I'm Dave Fox. Come on over and dance. So like, he kept making us dance.
Big time fiddler yeah, on the roof, Dave Fox.
Other than that, when I turned 18, he was really, really worried about me buying cigarettes and like a scratch ticket. And like, I wasn't even going to do the cigarettes or anything like that. And definitely not porn. I was just like, cool, I'm going to go buy a scratch ticket because I'm old enough to do that. And he was like, you know what, Em? It's a really bad habit. It's really terrible to get into gambling. And I was like, I'm buying a scratch ticket because of like the concept, not because I'm like, oh man, I'm going to hit it big and this is going to be a terrible habit of mine. So I remember not feeling great about that. I don't know. Like, he tried to like do like moral lessons, and he's very successful at that for the most part. But there are a few things that always stuck in my craw about that.
He's the best. Dave Fox is the best.
What about you?
I have no embarrassing or pathetic things that I've ever done on behalf of my father. There's nothing in my
that
closet.
That is a straight lie.
There's nothing in my closet, and you will. There are no.
Really, you're not going to say one thing.
There's nothing. I don't even know what it would be. I've got nothing. I'm a rebel, Emily. I've rebelled against my dad.
I mean,
all the way through.
He does talk about how you were terrifying because you used to question him.
Yeah,
when
I would
you were
say
a
no.
Kid.
I would say no. How about that, Dad?
All right, I'll let you off easy on this one. Someone ask him a question next week that we have to hold him to.
No, ask me no questions. All right, let's look ahead towards next week. The next episode of Succession, season 2, episode 3, is called Hunting. Are the Roys going to go on a hunting trip? That seems amazing.
It's very Dick Cheney-ish.
You know, I feel like there's a lot of great cinematic potential from something like that. So I am on board for that. We're going to be aiming to record that the afternoon of August 26th is what we are looking at. So get your questions in by that morning. You can send them in on Twitter at Post Show Recaps. I'm at Ryan Howard. Emily is at Amulet. Subscribe to our Succession feed so you don't miss an episode of our Succession podcast, or you can subscribe to the main Post Show Recaps feed so you don't miss anything else that we're doing on Post Show Recaps, including Down the Hatch, a Lost rewatch podcast that Mike Bloom and I are spearheading. We are launching our first recap of the Down the Hatch experiment later this week as we recap the two-part pilot. The reaction to the Lost podcast news has been astounding.
Yeah.
Emily. It's been very exciting. So we're
sorry.
No, don't be sorry. We're very excited to get into that. So subscribe to Hush Your Recaps and you will not miss anything. Anything else, Emily Fox?
No, I think that's it.
All right. That's it for us. We'll be back next week to talk about Hunting. Until then, take care, everybody.
Bye.
Before we close out today's Succession podcast, one last shout out, and that's to our friends over at TrueCar. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date. The luxury package you got after a big promotion. Or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. Well, you can't put a price tag on your stories now. With TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So, when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas.